So we talked yesterday about how the Barton Doctrine, which is now being challenged, has said since the 1890s, that if you're going to sue an estate professional, you've got to go back to the bankruptcy court and ask permission. So as to the estate professionals, I see very little here. I think what's different is the court appointed, in effect, the independent directors, making them sort of like quasi-examiners in some respects. Meredith, I think you may have been in the Sanchez case, and there we had independent directors, but the committee challenged them, saying, we don't think they're independent. The court held an evidentiary hearing and overruled the objections. So, I mean, we have these processes. Anyway, I really think Highland was a very peculiar case, and the opinion was written to address that conduct.
I think there's a lot of truth to that, because, and this is something that we've been struggling with some ourselves, is, you know, the three of us have spent a fair bit of time sitting around trying to dream up a cause of action that you would want an exculpation provision to protect you from that is not already probably knocked out. I see John nodding his head, knocked out by the fact that at the end of the case, the confirmation order says that the plan was filed in good faith, the disclosure statement had adequate information, it was properly solicited, everybody did a good job, your fees were approved, and that carries a certain estoppel element to it. And, you know, candidly, we have struggled to envision the claim that would still run the gauntlet of all of those things to get to the other side. Of course, the flip side of that is, if it's so esoteric a problem, why do we still bother to put these, why do we still feel so strongly about putting these plan exculpation provisions in there? John has another comment.
Yeah, the final point, Michael, is that the seems to me that any claim that could be brought arising from misconduct in the case would be a state property.
So
by definition would have to go back to the bankruptcy court.
You would think that, yes. My concern is, and I'm experiencing this right now on my docket, is that while the bankruptcy bar and bench knows that you need to come back if you're going to, you know, challenge behaviors, you know, whatever, try to unwind an order, whatever you're going to do, I'm not sure that the folks that are coming after trustees in the Fourth Circuit or, you know, these independent directors without this, I don't think they know. And what I've got in front of the situation we've got here is that they feel free to go to state court, to another federal court. And when you, the channeling injunction may not give you any more or fewer rights than you already had, and more or fewer protections. But it's a very clear message. You can have an order that you can go to that foreign court and say, we can't be here. We have to go back to the bankruptcy court. And that's a really easy thing for a foreign court to understand and wrap their minds around when they are foreign. They are not, you know. And so that's my concern. And so the question that I had with Bill Rochelle and the panel on the consumer side is that the other judges on my panel were like, well, are we going to have to really, when it comes to trustee cases, you know, Chapter 7 trustee cases, are we going to have to include one of these in every single order closing a case? Like, where do we go to help? How can we help? So.
Right. And, you know, I agree, probably any exculpated claim or any legitimate exculpated claim is probably a state property. I mean, this is something that we've, like Michael said, we've been struggling with and talking about quite a bit. Though, I mean, potentially there could be some sort of, you know, fraudulent claim, or maybe a creditor said fraud claim. A creditor would say that, you know, a debtor professional or, you know, committee professional gave them, you know, false information in the course of the case that fraudulently, you know, induced them to behave in some way, vote for the plan, maybe. And having the bankruptcy court have to see that claim in the first instance, you know, and, you know, if they bring it into a state court, you can essentially say, look, here's an order that says this claim has to be brought in the bankruptcy in the first place, could have you know, some benefits from, you know, frivolous lawsuits, et cetera. But, so, all of this leads into our next topic, which is releases.
Oh, we've got a comment.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah, just don't throw it.
I was the one who caught it yesterday. I'd love it if I was defending one of these, you know, claims brought by that guy to have, you know, the order and everything, and I'd love to show that to a state court judge. Still not convinced that they're necessarily going to follow it. I'm going to remove the case. So it's going to wind up before you anyway. Mm-hmm. If you had jurisdiction, you know, if you had removal jurisdiction, I don't know that the channeling order expands, you know, expands that jurisdiction. Do we really need it? Can't I just remove it and you can deal with it there?
You know, that's a really good point, and we do need to move on to our next topic, but I'm actually, you raise a really good point, and that is the one sort of guardrail that the Fifth Circuit did put around this, you know, perfectly lawful blessing of the concept of the gatekeeper provision is the circuit nevertheless made it clear that we're not expanding anybody's jurisdiction. Your jurisdiction, the bankruptcy court's jurisdiction, remains...